This is Barbara Glickstein with HealthCetera. Today I invite back my guest, Dr. Judith Smith, who is a psychotherapist and a professor emerita at Fordham University in the Department of Social Work. She's the author of Difficult, Mothering Challenging Adult Children Through Conflict and Change, published by Roman and Littlefield. And the paperback release was just this week on Tuesday, April 2nd. I had Dr. Smith on when the book first was released, and 2 years later, I've invited her back to really talk about what's transpired for the community of women in this situation and also lessons learned for all of us. Welcome back to HealthCetera, Dr. Smith.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So I know that this paperback version, which we've all been waiting for, which makes it more affordable, and also was still can be available in your library if you ask for it, both hardcover now and paperback, was published 2 years ago in February. And since then, you've been offering support groups, you've been doing individual consultation for mothers with difficult adult children. Can you share with us some of those stories? I know that you protect the privacy of people who come to you for care, but what are some of the global key points and themes that you've identified in the past 2 years since the book's release?
Well, I think the first thing is to really give this a name and to let mothers who are living with this problem feel that they are not alone. I mean, I think I got so many letters when the book first came out 2 years ago where people said, thank you. I've been really feeling like I'm the only person who experiences this. And what the book offers is it has stories of, you know, I picked about 12 different women and I give their stories. And so somehow seeing that somebody else, that Jillian or Doreen, went through something, it's not just like what some of, if there are people listening who have, let's talk about what a difficult adult child is, that it's someone who has serious mental illness or substance use disorder. And the word difficult is not meant to be pejorative or say your kid is a bad kid, but that what I did by listening to moms about what their mothering career had been with an adult child who had serious problems. I didn't know what problems moms were going to talk about, but it ended up being serious mental illness and substance use disorder, or chronic unemployment, which often was caused by an underlying mental health problem. But as mothers wrote to me, they said, finally, I see my story in a book. Thank you. I am not crazy. I am not alone. And I kept hearing this. And when I did my research, you know, as an academic, you write academic articles and it goes off into the academic universe. You don't really know where it's going to land. This was a leap of faith to write this book for parents, particularly for moms. And when I started getting these letters, I thought, oh my God, what qualitative research works, what I heard from the people I interviewed and the themes that I identified, in fact, are what women are experiencing. And as more letters came in and I tried processing it, I said, okay, I'm going to run a book group. So I offered a book group. It was during COVID. So I offered a book group online where we read some of the different themes. And then I started offering webinars to talk about each of the topics. And then I felt like this people needed more. So I started offering support groups. And I have been really moved by this. You know, when you start something, you know, I was a professor of social work, and I taught courses about group work and taught the importance of social support groups. You know, in social work, you know, if you have cancer and you're going for treatment, your doctor will often offer you to be into a support group for women with breast cancer. And I would teach my students about the importance of social support. But here I was running a social support group, and I really felt in a very visceral way how important this was. Just recently I was running a group. It was a new group. It was the first session. And one of the moms, after about half an hour, she just sort of squealed. And she said, I can't believe I am sitting in a room with other mothers talking about this?
You know, I've said this to you in our, where we have a friendship relationship and professional relationship, where I've said to you, you are filling a void that most people outside of this world didn't even know existed. And here, this void is being filled with this book, which provides tremendous support in and of itself. And now you've developed this community who are seeing you in their support group. I think you mentioned to me, by choice, some of the women are connected outside of the support group, and connecting it to, and this idea of this model of a community in need that you're now identified and now you're supporting. So what does that feel like for you?
I feel very lucky. You know, I'm 76 years old myself. I interviewed moms who were older. I mean, as I got older, I got interested in gerontology. I have stopped teaching. I'm emeritus from Fordham. I feel very lucky to have a project that I really care about. I guess it's shown some light for me on retirement and how having a project and being engaged and giving back is really what I want to be doing. You know, when people say, where are you traveling? You know, I say, well, right now I'm doing my work. And part of me feels a little silly. You know, I should be, you know, going to Morocco or someplace. But this is giving me a lot of satisfaction to use my clinical skills, to use my policy skills, and to feel like I'm actually really helping people and learning. I'm learning from people.
Yeah, we're not ready to just only travel. We do some traveling, right, but we want to mix it up and keep our purpose and our skills and our wisdom growing.
Right.
So I'm happy to hear that for you, Dr. Smith. You mentioned some of the stories and the kinds of problems that these moms face. Again, I know you're sharing this information, keeping the privacy of those who've been in the groups, but for those who may not understand, or even for those who might be in this situation, who think, you know, we talk about what's normalizing relationships in the family. What are some of those stories? What's some of the impact that these difficult adult children with either mental health, substance use, or as you said, the unemployment, chronically unemployed situations, which might be a result of a mental health problem. What's the impact on these moms?
It varies based on what the issues the adult child is experiencing. But I'll talk about three different scenarios. I mean, one is if your adult child comes back home, they move out, then problems arise, and they can't support themselves, and they come knocking on the door, and they're back home. So sharing your home again with your child for anyone, even on holidays when your kids come home, it's a new, everybody has to adjust. But if you're back home with your child who's really suffering and isn't willing or able to talk about it, I mean, one of the really most stressful parts of having a child with serious mental illness is something called anosognosia, which is that neurologically, a good proportion of people who have serious mental illness, and there's a distinction between serious mental illness and what they call average mental illness, or any mental illness, I think National Association of our government funds it, is psychotic thinking, hallucinations, delusions is in serious mental illness. So if you have anosognosia, is the brain somehow doesn't know that if I have anosognosia and I'm seriously mentally ill, I don't realize that I'm ill. It's, I think more of us are familiar with if somebody has had a stroke and you're not aware that your left arm is not working and you try to pick it up because you think it's still working. Well, the same thing is true with serious mental illness.
That's interesting.
So that explains a lot of why people don't seek help. You know, that they think they're okay. And the idea that one should go into a psychiatric hospital or take medication, which often has a lot of bad effects. And we've gotten a lot better with the medication, But it's a huge trial and error to figure out what really works, what's not going to create a lot of weight gain. And people don't like taking medication that makes you feel bad, particularly if you think there's no reason. So to be the parent of a child that you know their thinking is off, they're concerned about things that aren't really happening in your estimation, but they don't realize it. Some parents think their kid's just being stubborn, but it's really a neurological deficit. And I think as a country and worldwide, there's a question, what should we do about, you know, we have so many homeless people who have serious mental illness. And should we be insisting that they take medication? How do we go about that? It's a very complicated issue, a sort of human rights versus families concerned for their loved one. Nobody wants their loved ones to be on the street.
And suffering. Yeah. I think, as you said, it's not only our national problem, but a global problem.
Right.
And sadly, a prediction that this will only become more of a problem going forward, as we know that the numbers of people suffering from mental illness seems to be on the rise, particularly in young people. So you mentioned that this becomes an issue of communication between the mother and the adult child who's moved back in. They don't see themselves, the adult child doesn't think they have a problem. The mother who's taken the family, sometimes not just the individual, is now struggling with that. So that was one of the scenarios.
Yeah, and also your house is suddenly chaotic, and it's not your own anymore, and your food's being eaten, your privacy's invaded, and you don't feel like your adult child is doing their part by taking care of themselves. Right. But you want to do everything you can. So on the one hand, if you let your kids back in, there's great tension of living together again, and you know, if you're 60 years old, 70 year old, 80 years, this is not how you imagined your older years were going to be. And you don't want to be fighting with your kid all the time. And so do you continue to let them stay? Do you kick them out? Where are they going to go? I mean, this is the biggest problem, that there's no place for them to go. We have homeless shelters. This is not a great place to live. But there are subsidized housing for people who have documented serious mental illness. But so there's the, if you're living together again. But on the other side, how it impacts a mother is just feeling terrible that your child is ill. And substance use disorder is also an illness. And you want to help. We're used to helping. And we want to get them to the doctor to get them help, get them into rehab. But our kids are now adults, and you can't make somebody go into rehab, and you can't cure mental illness. So you feel very powerless, and as mothers, it's so painful to see our kids in pain, and also to see our kids not achieving what their dreams were. That often, if someone has a psychotic break, it often begins in 19 years old, 20. So kids could be on a really positive track, and then suddenly this mental illness happens. So in some ways, there's a great loss of the child that you thought you had. And so you're living, and you have to adjust your expectations of what's going to be, how is this person going to be able to have a life that's meaningful in the world? And without medication, that's very hard. And without getting off drugs or alcohol, that's very hard. So the things that could help them, you can't make happen. So the sense of powerlessness that mothers feel is terrible, because we also all believe as moms that we can do, if we really work hard enough, we can really...
We're the fixers. We know how to fix things.
Right, we can do it.
Yeah. So the publication's now out. I'm sorry, finish the third. You said there was a third third reaction that these moms have to share.
The moms feel ashamed. You know, that mental illness is still, and drug abuse even more than mental illness,
yeah,
is an assumption that the family did something wrong. And so these moms are feeling ashamed that their kids are not succeeding in the way that their sister's kids are achieving or their neighbor's kids are achieving. So the mothers sort of stop talking about it with other people. They go quiet when someone says, "How's Susie?" And they become much more isolated. And I think the moms in my group have been really talking about the loneliness that comes with all this. Wow. Not only are you living with one crisis after another, but you have really cut back on sharing what's going on with you with people who you used to be very close to. So your social network has really diminished. You're alone. And for some moms, because kids who are on drugs or seriously ill can become violent towards their own families. So the more isolated you are, the more dangerous it becomes. So it's a very, very hard position to be in.
In the mothers that you have engaged with through the different platforms that you've created, does it create estrangement with other siblings and spouses when an adult child has moved back in or never left?
Certainly. The kids who are healthier feel like they're not getting as much, and they resent that so much emotional energy is going towards the more troubled person in the family. And in fact, it's true. I mean, people, researchers who've actually looked at where families have one child who is more psychologically ill, that child gets more emotional time, more resources, not because the parents love them more, but the sibs do resent it.
So now that your book, Difficult Mothering, Challenging Adult Children Through Conflict and Change, published by Rowan and Littlefield, is out in paperback, it makes it more affordable and accessible. Again, it can be requested at your local library. If someone, since I know more people bought the book than you've had a close encounter with in terms of either attending a webinar, in a support group, or individual counseling, do you see your book as a self-help tool for this, for mothers in this situation? Do people write to you and say what they get out of it from reading the book as a first step, maybe not someone who would join a support group or attend a webinar? For those who are listening, and maybe they know someone or they themselves are in this situation, how would you say the book can be helpful to them?
I think the most important way is that it makes you realize you're not alone. And I think the same as when your doctor, if you have breast cancer, says, please go to a support group. It's really important to realize that this is a problem beyond your family. It's not that you were a bad mom. It's when your child has a serious problem that things happen, and they happen in certain ways, not just because of you and your partner. They happen because of the mental illness. Not having a job for a young person is terrible. Losing their friends because of the illness is terrible. So realizing how other mothers cope with this, the decisions they faced, and I think mothers feel very relieved seeing that they are not the only ones who are not saying, oh, I've had it, go. You know, that this idea of tough love is not what any mother who I talk to wants, and it's not what the women in my book talk about. So I think using the book, if you could really go through it, and each chapter talks about different conflicts that women experience. It also gives a very good primer about what is mental illness, because sometimes we're not sure if our kid is just stubborn or are they really ill. I also give a whole series of resources where you can begin to look for help. So I think the book is absolutely useful on helping yourself, or you can create your own support group among people you know. Unfortunately, people are not that public about having this issue, but if you begin to put a notice in your local paper looking for other parents who have adult children with serious mental illness or difficult issues, you can create your own support group.
I'm also curious about your community of other providers, both in the clinical psychology and clinical social work world, and psychiatry as well, who I know you've had some engagement with around this area of expertise and scholarship research, as well now a clinical environment that you're creating for mothers in this situation. How well-versed do you feel the clinical community is on this issue? And what's your hope for the future, that other clinicians would become more focused on this community of mothers?
Well, I think it's really been a big omission in training programs we do. In social work, we had maybe 2 sessions on serious mental illness, and that's just about the person who has the serious mental illness. We don't talk enough about what that is. But the idea of the families of the people who have serious mental illness, it's really been not enough part of our policy attention. I know in Europe and in the UK in particular, now there's big push, and they're working and successful at getting the government to give money not just to helping people who have a substance use problem, but to helping the families.
Wow.
Because this really is a family issue. And I think we have to, it's not, obviously the person who has the serious mental illness needs help, needs attention. We need to figure out how to best help them as a society. But we have to also, right now, pay much more attention to the fact that it is families, and particularly mothers, who are being the safety net for their kids. And this has to be part of the professional training, and we have to know how to even begin to talk to the moms. That it becomes a dilemma if you are a clinical person and a mom comes to you and she wants help because her adult child is being abusive or being aggressive, and should she kick him out or should she not? People need to be trained about how do you help engage the mom so she doesn't feel pushed by you, feels understood. That there's a lot to learn for clinicians about the inner experience of mothers. They've really been left out of the dialogue in terms of older people. You know, I think with mothers of young children, we've made a lot of headway in the last 40 years. It used to be, you know, if a mother knew her kid had colic, she would not tell anybody. Now it's in all the papers how hard it is to want to take a shower, how hard it is to work and raise your kids. But we have to do this for parents of adult children as well. You know, that it's an unseen group, it's an unrecognized social problem. And the more, on a larger scale, we can really attend to having a knowledge base to help these moms, they will feel less alone when they seek out help.
If people wanted to learn more about this work and contact you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, it's Judith R. Smith, but Difficult Mothering. So the book is called Difficult, and all my social media and everything is Difficult Mothering. So the website is difficultmothering.com. You can email me at judithrsmith@difficultmothering. So you can just Google. There are not many people who are writing about this, so just do Difficult Mothering and I'll pop up, and I'd be glad to talk to you, help you find resources. If you want to start your own support group, I will be glad to help you figure that out. It's pretty easy using the book, and I'm here to help.
Thank you. My guest, Dr. Judith R. Smith, is a psychotherapist and professor emerita at Fordham University and the author of the book, Difficult, Mothering Challenging Adult Children Through Conflict and Change, published by Rowan and Littlefield, now in paperback, just released on Tuesday, April 2nd. Thank you for coming back and joining me on this very important topic. I look forward to hearing more about the success of supporting the women and the adult children in this community. This is Barbara Glickstein with HealthCetera.